Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening. It is time for the Aston Villa Fan Show on Love Sport. It is 2 minutes past 10. I am Matt Beadle. We're going to be with you through till 10:30 this evening. And it was so close, yet so far for the Villains at the Emirates this weekend. 2-1 up, and within inches of victory. It was snatched away from them as Arsenal fought back. 10-man Arsenal fought back against the Villa side, who nearly, oh so very nearly, got 3 points at the Emirates. Joining me, as ever, is Ryan Pitcher of, I should say, Under a Gaslit Lamp. Ryan, you've made an astonishing transfer.
Yeah, I've transferred. Hopefully my first article will go live tomorrow for them. And so, yeah, I'll be producing content for them from now on.
Lovely stuff. So this is another Aston Villa fan platform page.
It is indeed, yeah. It's another page. So, I'm looking forward to it. And let's see how it goes.
Right, Ryan, there's plenty to discuss about mm-hmm. that game with Arsenal yesterday. But you know what? Before we talk about anything else, the massive elephant in the room that seems to kind of been ignored, it kind of seems to have been glossed over a little bit, is the handball from Sokratis. Because of regardless of anything, regardless of Arsenal's fight back, regardless of the fact they were down to 10 men, regardless of the fact that Aston Villa potentially, you could say, threw it away, you should have had a penalty in the dying moments of the game and it was not given. And what is the point of having VAR there if not, they're not giving these decisions like that? That was clear and obvious if ever I've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Matt. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about the game in a short while. But yeah, no, absolutely. Is you're right. What's the point in VAR when you've got, you know, what is effectively clear and obvious error on such a big decision so late on in the game? I felt that we certainly deserve something from the game. So I think it would have been just, and it certainly would have been just because it was the right thing to do, if anything. But yeah, I was very surprised that it wasn't overturned. But look, there's nothing much we can do about it now. It's just another one that got away.
But that frustrates me, right? Because I believe that argument can't be given anymore. You know, there's nothing we can do about it now. We just have to get over it. Like now with VAR, that should put an end to those arguments because there is something that we can do about it in games. And that's why we shouldn't be able to have that argument anymore. When it's the referee's call, I get it. Without VAR, you can go, do you know what? Shrug the shoulders. You win some, you lose some. In this case, you absolutely should not lose some because the video evidence apparently is supposed to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously an endless debate, and you're right. We shouldn't be in that predicament at all. I think as fans, we've now, I was very sceptical on the whole introduction of VAR. I actually wrote about it prior to going live this season. You know, but me personally, I'm a supporter of, you know, not having VAR from a supporter perspective because I enjoy the talking points after the game. But now it's here. You know, I always think, you know, at least, you know, it's going to be a fair game and it will, you know, rather than relying on that old saying of, you know, things evening themselves out over the course of a season, you know, you've got something safe to refer to, as you say, and get the decisions correct. But clearly it's not happening and it's something that they're going to have to look at. And I'm sure, you know, they're not going to do it during the season, I don't think. Come the end of the season, there's going to be an awful lot of lessons to be, you know, to be had.
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. And you said there that you felt like Villa deserved something from the game. Bernd Leno, the Arsenal goalkeeper, after the game, that he felt Arsenal were well deserved of the victory. We had the Arsenal fan show on Love Sport earlier on today, and they, when I presented that argument to them that perhaps Arsenal didn't deserve the victory, lost their heads. They were like, absolutely, we deserve the victory. We were down to 10 men. We were hammering Villa in that second half. What's your view on that? You did feel like Villa deserved something from the game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first half, I couldn't really fault us. You know, I was very impressed with Trezeguet, who worked really hard up and down the right flank, not only in terms of protecting our fullback Gilbert, but also causing plenty of problems for Arsenal further up the park. But no, that said, the whole team were really good, defending well, and we had good shape, but we were also causing them a lot of problems. And that was, you know, forgetting that, that was 11 versus 11. As we went into the second half, we actually started off really well for the first 5 minutes or so, and obviously created a couple of chances. And I think if we take one of those, then the crowd, you know, really would have turned against Emery and perhaps even the team as a whole. And I genuinely believe if we score early on in that second half, it would have been a comfortable win. I was listening earlier on. I did hear a little bit of the Arsenal chat, and what they said on the show, you know, about Guendouzi, he really did step up to the plate in that second half and drove them forward. But the reason why I think that we certainly deserve something from the game is, you know, we caused our own downfall. You know, despite having a man advantage. You know, our central midfield area looked extremely lethargic in the second half. And at times, there was just so much space in between our midfield and our back line to exploit. And we just allowed Guendouzi and in fact, pretty much the whole of the Arsenal midfield freedom to move forward. We might as well just have laid out a red carpet, to be honest.
And John McGinn said that after the game, didn't he? That's 2 weeks in a row now that the opposition, obviously it was Arthur Masuaku for West Ham last weekend. You got a 0-0 draw on that occasion. This time, you've lost the game. And John McGinn, said after the game, you know, you said we've addressed it. Whether it's a lack of belief or tiredness, it shouldn't be the case. We should have the spare man and we should be the ones creating chances. But it just doesn't feel like that at the moment.
Yeah, and it's you know, I mean, with McGinn saying that, it's quite funny is in the sense that I felt that, you know, he was the one that was looking quite leggy in the field. It's something that we spoke about on the show a couple of weeks back, I think, when you were off. And the seeming reluctance for Smith to take off either Grealish and or McGinn for the whole benefit of the team and the result itself. You know, I was left flabbergasted at just how heavy leg that they looked in that second half, especially McGinn. He looked absolutely shattered. And that, along with a couple of costly individual errors, but conceivably that may not have, they may not have come about had Smith turned to the bench much sooner. And that cost us the game. You know, when Torreira and Willock came on after about 70 minutes or so, now that surely must have sent a message to Dino that Arsenal were just going to carry on at us through the middle like a battering ram until we collapsed or forced an error. The middle of the park is the where we needed legs and to take control of that game. You know, as I touch upon in an article that's going live tomorrow, it's that this wasn't about the defence getting continually deeper, as Dino said post-match. It's only natural to become much deeper and standoffish if you don't have the adequate protection in front of you. And I'm starting to think that Dino just doesn't trust what he has on the bench. That's the only explanation for not making a change in the middle until we're 3-2 down with 5 minutes left.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raised there because obviously El Mohamedy came on for Trezeguet around the 70-minute mark and then he waited until, you know, the 85th, 86th minute for Conor Hourihan and Henry Lansbury obviously coming on to play against his former club. But when you look at that bench, we'll read them out now. You've got Lansbury, you've got Jed Steer, obviously the goalkeeper. You've got Hourihan, Konsa, Jota, the new signing, of course, who hasn't really pulled up any trees yet. You have El Mohamedy as well on that bench and Davis was there too. It isn't the strongest, is it?
No, I mean, some supporters, I think, bizarrely, as far as I'm concerned, you know, believe that taking off Trezeguet and bringing on Elmo was the cause of the downfall. That wasn't the case at all, you know. I think, to be honest, pretty much most of our midfield looked quite leggy in that second half, which when you're the team with the man advantage, really doesn't make sense. That wasn't the change that killed it for us. It was definitely the lack of change in the middle of the park. You know, there's no reason why, if it had been me and I was manager of Aston Villa Football Club, is I would have made two changes in the middle of the park and I would have taken McGinn and Grealish off. And, you know, I would have brought in Lansbury and Hourihan. I know that sounds, you know...
You would have taken Grealish off, would you?
Well, I think that... I know that sounds silly to a lot of Villa fans, but, you know, that's where we look weak. We looked weak in there. There was, you know, they were so far up the park quite a lot of the time. They're jogging back, you know, and we needed that addedness in there. We needed legs, players to not only to, you know, obviously when you're we shouldn't have been in the position that we're in, you know, defending against 10 men as the way we were. But when you're defending like that, is one, you get leggy. Two is if you're wanting to counter, you can't because you've just been chasing shadows for large periods of the game. And I would have made those changes straight away. Well, I say straight away, certainly, 65th, 70th minute mark.
And I suppose when you look at how Villa are failing to close games out as well at the moment, that's another issue. We talked about the red cards causing an issue in terms of the way that Villa slightly shifted the way that they were playing. But weirdly, it works out that the two North London clubs, both Spurs and Arsenal, you conceded two goals in the final 10 minutes. Listen, these are games, no great shakes that you haven't won these games. You probably would never have expected to have won these games, let alone get a draw against these teams. However, you were in the ascendancy against both. There is something in there, isn't there, where Dean Smith, like you said, needs to have maybe a bit more tactical now in order to close these games out.
And it's funny that this really surprises me. I've gone from last season commenting about, you know, I'm not, you know, having too much of a pop at Dean Smith. You know, he's still learning the job, particularly in the top flight. You know, it is a big step up. But we can't keep talking about that, games that, you know, we could have had this, we should have had that. You know, we've shown we're capable of pitting ourselves up against other Premier League clubs. You know, we're only losing by the odd goal here or there. You know, talking about teams inside of the top six here, obviously very competitive away at Spurs, very competitive against Arsenal and should have won that game. But ultimately, it's not just about having spells in games or being competitive and doing okay. We need to make sure that we're doing enough to keep our heads above water. And the longer some people, you know, and supporters banging about this whole gelling and giving it time, we'll get there eventually, we'll get the rub of the green, you know, all that. Games are going by where we should be getting something. And it's not just about giving it time and all that. You know, we've shown we can do it in stints. It's about just doing it consistently. It is very concerning that we can't see out these kind of games, but we have to find a way. We simply have to find a way.
Yeah, and you mentioned the fact that the team do have to gel and hopefully it will all click at some point. That does have to happen. When you look at the run of fixtures coming up, obviously Brighton in the Carabao Cup on Wednesday, you then host Burnley, you travel to Norwich and you host Brighton again. You look at those three games because prior to you playing against Man City and Liverpool, those three games are huge, aren't they, over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, there's no getting away from the fact that the next three league games are absolutely, you know, massive for us. And we need six or seven from those at a minimum, really. You know, as you alluded to, after that, we've got a horrible run of fixtures. You know, we've got trips to Man City, Wolves, United, Chelsea, a home clash against Liverpool. You know, I think that's five of seven games thereafter. Those are really, really tough games. And if anything, just for confidence, we need to get a couple of wins on the board over the course of these next three fixtures. Just to basically, you know, the lads can go in the changing room after the game and say, you know what, we can do this. We've had a couple of results and take that momentum. Otherwise, you know, if we don't do that and we come up against these bigger sides and these tougher opposition, and we could really find ourselves, certainly by the next international break and in the immediate aftermath of that, we could find ourselves, you know, languishing a little bit. And I alluded to it last week, is really is a case of getting to January with damage limitation. I know that sounds drastic and, you know, I'm not pushing the alarm bells in that sense, but it's true. We have to get to January and in the mix at least, and not too far cut adrift.
I think looking at it from the outside as well, Ryan, is that prior to those sendings off against West Ham and Arsenal, Villa were trying to win the game, especially at the Emirates yesterday. There was intent, there was positivity, bodies were going forward. And whether this is just lip service from Dean Smith or not, I don't know. But the fact that he said there is no big concern, he seems very chilled. He said, you know, we're having a good go. And quite crucially, he said, apart from Man City and Liverpool, I don't fear anyone in this league.
It's not showing, is it? No, I mean, it's... yes. You know, I'm before the start of the season, something I've said before, is before the start of the season, Dino was giving it large about how he's not going to change his philosophy and stuff like that. But sometimes you just have to, I admire the fact that, you know, 11 versus 11 against Arsenal, you know, it's no mean fear, particularly what we've seen when Villa have gone to Arsenal over the past few years, to go there and, maybe not outplay them would be certainly a stretch when I say that, but you know, give them a good run for their money and take a lead, you know. And I admire that. I admire that we're not just sitting back in and we are trying to cause these problems. But in-game management is crucial. You know, you have to adapt to what's going on in the game. And clearly at the moment, we're struggling when teams go down to 10 men. That shouldn't be the case. That's a grand opportunity to get 3 points. You're not going to get much of a better opportunity in the Premier League, whether you're playing against Man City or you're playing against, you know, no disrespect, you know, a Norwich or whatever, to get 3 points. And we simply have to manage these games, regardless of how many players are on the pitch. We have to manage the games and we have to start getting some results.
Absolutely. That is the voice of Ryan Pitcher of Under a Gaslit Lamp. And this is the Aston Villa Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is the Aston Villa Fan Show on Love Sport. I'm Matt Beadle and I'm with you through until 11 p.m. this evening. But now we are talking all things Aston Villa. I'm joined by Ryan Pitcher of Under a Gaslit Lamp. And of course, Aston Villa play Brighton in the Carabao Cup this week before hosting Burnley at Villa Park in next week's Premier League fixtures. Burnley, of course, getting back to winning ways at home to Norwich this weekend. Delighted to say now that we've got Chris Bowden, sports editor and chief writer at the Burnley Express, on the line. Chris, a good result for Burnley this weekend.
Yeah, very good result. I think people were a bit apprehensive after Norwich's result last week. You know, it could go either way, really, can't it? They could sort of be like after the Lord Mayor's show sort of thing when you get a result like that. Or you know, it can work how it did on Saturday, where Burnley effectively won the game in the first 15 minutes and probably could and should have won by more.
In terms of what Sean Dyche is bringing to this Premier League, I kind of feel like every season now, he gets an opening day when everyone expects it to go fine, and then it's a bit of a lose, draw, sort of period. And then he starts to win again. Do you think that we're going to see the Burnley that we've seen in previous campaigns this season? Do you think Sean Dyche has taken Burnley as far as he can, or do you think there's more to come?
I think it'd be hard pushed to sort of top that seventh place 18 months ago. But it's if people look, you know, they've started sort of, you know, started fairly well. You know, they're ahead of the curve in terms of you know, a point per game keeps you up. So you know, if you're ahead of that, then great. But in terms of the calendar year, I think, you know, I think I counted up the other day, I think they sort of, from 25 games, they've taken 36 points. So, you know, if you put that over a season, you're well safe with sort of like 13 games to go. So they're in decent nick, like full stop this year. So it's not about maintaining that, really.
We've got Ryan Pitcher on the line. He is part of Under a Gaslit Lamp. And a player, Ryan, you will know only too well, of course, is Ashley Westwood, last season's player of the year for Burnley.
Yeah, it surprises me. You know, he totally divides opinion among Villa fans. You know, I was quite critical, it has to be said, when he was at Villa for his insistence on, you know, passing it backwards and sideways. Don't get me wrong, his range of passing was really good, but just didn't do too much with the ball. It was never cutting any defences, you know, or anything like that. It was really simple stuff. You know, I felt that I could go in there and do an equally as adept job as what he was doing. You know, maybe it was difficult for him. He was coming at a time where we were, you know, suffering from quite a bit of austerity in terms of from a budget perspective. And, you know, he did get dog's abuse, it has to be said. But that's fair play to him. He's gone to Burnley and he's doing a job there. And I'm pleased that, you know, the fans there are lording over him a bit.
Chris, I was actually surprised myself. I spoke to Tom Heaton last season and it was actually prior to the awards show. And he said, you know, without a doubt, I'm pretty sure Ashley Westwood is going to win all the awards this season. What's he brought to the Burnley side?
Well, he had to be patient initially. He was sort of behind Stephen Dufour in the pecking order. And, you know, in a way, he's sort of a mix of Dufour. You know, he's not probably, you know, he's technically gifted, but not at the level Dufour was. But he's got that sort of Joey Barton like you know, steel to him. He can put his foot in, and he can, you know, he can set the tempo of a game, and you know, really drag his teammates with you. But he's in a side that plays forward early, and that's what he's, you know, it's interesting to say at Villa, who's playing sort of sideways and backward. At Burnley, he looks forward, and he looks forward early, and he's getting assists. You know, people will have seen his assist from the corner at the weekend. An absolute dream of a corner that, you know, I think you and I would have headed in. You know, not to discredit Chris Wood, but I think, you know, he's sort of finishing with that, you know, high level of assists last season, and he's, you know, continued where he's left off. And he's, I mean, he's not a young lad now. He knows the game in and out. But you say probably that time at Villa, probably the same with Matt Lowton, to be fair. He was, probably needed bigger, stronger characters at that time to drag Villa out of a hole, really. And I think people could see that relegation coming a mile off, and unfortunately they weren't able to stop it.
I mean, we didn't really see much of the kind of Joey Barton-esque type of, you know, tenacity of Westwood. I think that's the big difference. For fans of any football club, is they like to see that in a player. And I just don't think we saw enough of that. I was eager to ask, actually, what a Burnley fan made of Tom Eaton's transfer to Villa and the project. That he joined at Villa. Was that a surprise to them at all?
Probably yes and no, really. I think, once Nick Pope had signed the new deal in the summer, I think everyone was like questioning, you know, does this mean Nick Pope's going to be number one now at Burnley? You know, Tom obviously dropping back into the side halfway through the season sort of changed the momentum in the season for Burnley, and his form over the second half was exemplary. I say, I can count the number of mistakes he's made in 6 years at Burnley on one hand. He's just staggering. Mr. Consistent. Mm-hmm. Top man. Absolute top man. Top goalkeeper. As good as I've ever seen. I've covered Burnley for 25 years. I've been watching him for 35 years, 36 years, and he's the best I've seen in that time. But I think maybe there's sort of a... I wouldn't say he's sort of, you know, he's not gone over the edge where he's sort of maybe he's, you know, his form's going to decline. But you look at his age, and you look at Nick Pope's age, and obviously there's Joe Hart in the books as well. They've signed Bailey Peacock Farrell to sort of do what Nick Pope did and sort of learn under those and come through. I think it was just for a free transfer, given 6 years, it was, you know, it was just good business basically.
Yeah.
I liked it, actually, and it's one of those where there was no controversy around that particular deal. Tom Heaton obviously had a good conversation with Sean Dyche. Sean Dyche was quite open and said basically it was about money. I wanted him to take a move that was good for him. He decided to do that. He's got the new project at Aston Villa. Burnley, like you said, you've got Nick Pope there. You've got Joe Hart there. What's going to happen with him at the end of this season? We don't know. But also Bailey Peacock Farrell is there to learn under those. Is Adam Ligdon still at Burnley as well, Chris?
He is, yeah. But, you know, very much sort of, training with the group, helping the under-23s and, sort of just helping push the other goalkeepers. It's, a very good character and seem to have this sort of vacancy now. You know, you look at Scott Carson going to Manchester City and Lee Grant at Manchester United and there's a room for like a number three, number four goalkeeper at every club now, isn't it?
Yeah, I tell you what, it's those elderly goalkeepers, the veteran goalkeepers in League One and the Championship, just desperate for that phone call. Will you just come and just hang out at us and we'll give you that job? Chris, thank you very much for joining us. A quick score prediction before you go, if you will.
Oh, good Lord. I'm going to sit on the fence and take one apiece.
Lovely stuff. Nice one, Chris. Thanks for joining us. That was Chris Bowden, sports editor and chief writer at the Burnley Express. Ryan, very interesting stuff on Ashley Westwood there, because I was the same as you. I looked at him as very much a crab-like footballer for Aston Villa. Never really did anything, didn't really stand out, especially in that relegation campaign. You just thought he's not going to be the one to make a difference. But he seems to have really become a pivotal figure in that Burnley midfield.
Yeah, hats off to him. I mean, as I say, I think it was difficult. You know, everyone was poor in that Villa side.
Yeah,
to be
true.
Honest. And you know, he don't get me wrong, he did a job, but he didn't do anything outstanding. Nothing that kind of I thought, God, he's going to set the world apart. But I mean, comparing him to Joey Barton there, and clearly I don't see him on a week by week basis anymore. So clearly, he's showing a bit more feistiness and tenacity in his play, and maybe maturing somewhat has been good for him. And so it's clearly been a good move.
Mm. And I just want to quickly touch on the signings. I know we pretty much do this in every single show that we do now, but I want to touch on them, one, because of the fact that I think you could have won the game had Trezeguet, who had a great chance to finish it off and make it 3-1 late on. Jack Grealish, again, there's another argument to suggest that was Jack Grealish playing too deep against Arsenal, but Trezeguet had a great chance to win the game. Awful finish. Absolutely abysmal, abysmal finish.
Yeah. I think the crucial time period, I think, was more so before that, when we came out early in the second half and we had a good 5 minute spell or so. I felt that at that time was certainly where we could have killed the game. But yeah, you are right. When the ball comes across him on the right hand side, I'm expecting a lot better there. But listen, you know, it's another game that's seen us by, and we've just got to get on with it. We've just got to pick ourselves up and hopefully get the 3 points on Saturday.
Yep, and before that, just quickly before you go, Ryan, you do have Brighton in the Carabao Cup. Do you think this is a tournament that both teams are not overly fussed about? Would you happily go out of the Carabao Cup, or do you look at it and think, do you know what, maybe it'll be good to build a bit of momentum?
Look, if you offered me 7 to 9 points over the course of the next three games, I'd happily go out of this competition. To be honest, I'm expecting multiple changes based on the tired legs against the 10-man Arsenal that we saw on Sunday. I expect, you know, a catalogue of changes. I wouldn't be surprised to see a whole different 11, but yeah, I'd happily go out of that if it meant, you know, we got a few more points on the board.
Yep, that was the answer I was expecting from you, Ryan. Ryan Pitcher of Under a Gaslit Lamp. Thanks for joining us, buddy. We will see you next week.
Cheers.
That was Ryan Pitcher of Under a Gaslit Lamp. On this, the Aston Villa Fan Show. They play Brighton in the Carabao Cup on Wednesday, and then they host Burnley in the Battle of the Claret and Blues next weekend. Right, it's the Derby County Fan Show coming up next on Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. We'll be right back.